Hello and welcome to A Storm of Spoilers Off-Season Tour. My name is Dave Gonzalez, and I would not get away from Michael Myers. I would die, and I'd be one of those people pinned to a wall by a knife.
I'm Joanna Robinson, and I would definitely die by the hand of Michael Myers on account of the fact that I do a lot of babysitting. In fact, I'll be doing some babysitting later tonight.
And I'm Neil Miller, and I would not die at the hands of Michael Myers, for I am the Laurie Strode of my Hamlet. There's no way in hell that I would ever get killed by Michael Myers. Can't imagine a scenario in which that would be true. I'm a fast runner. I know that cars exist. It's all good. My house is very secure.
Fast runner is really all you need.
Yeah, well, I'm not that fast, but I'm faster than a dude walking.
Yeah. That's all you need to be. That's right. Good. I'm glad one of us would survive. That's important. There needs to be a final person. Otherwise, you wouldn't get a sequel 40 years later, like this week's subject, Halloween, the new Halloween. We're also going to talk about the 10 other Halloweens. But this, in case you've been listening to a lot of Storm Spoilers episodes in this spooky season, although they've all had like Halloween or spooky or horror in the title, and next week's might as well, this is the actual Halloween franchise episode. I hope you've tuned in to the right show. If you are a donator to the show, a patron at our Patreon at patreon.com/stormofspoilers, at the Maester or Small Council level, you will get a bonus segment this week about Marvel's Netflix properties. There's a new Daredevil season 3, Iron Fist and Luke Cage are out, and there's thoughts and feelings around all those subjects. But first, a little bit of housekeeping. You like Game of Thrones. We like Game of Thrones. We originally were a Game of Thrones podcast. We're going to continue being a Game of Thrones podcast for the amazing final season next year. And then after that, come the Con of Thrones in Nashville, July 12th through 14th. Tickets are on sale now. Get a 3-day ticket to make sure that you see all of our panels and we see all of your beautiful faces. Con of Thrones. Check it out. And now, to Joanna with reviews.
Oh, hello. Speaking of us being a Game of Thrones podcast, I have a one-star, two-star review from like a very disappointed Game of Thrones fan. Carbon60 left this review, like, would you believe it? They left this review, like, yesterday. And it's all about Game of Thrones. And I'm like, oh, wait, yeah, I forgot we were Game of Thrones podcast. It says about 20% spoilers, 80% just random guessing. Carbon60 writes, was interested for a while, but the constant guessing gets boring quick. Also seems like Game of Thrones can't do a single thing to please these hosts. If they spend time to flesh out a place and the hosts complain that it's boring and taking too long, if they skip past a place they like, then they complain about not spending more time there. Dorne, would not recommend. I don't know which season Carbon60 is talking about here, but if it's last season, I will just push back on those percentages because, as we've said before, we knew 95% of what happened last season, like, as a fact. So we were definitely not guessing last season. But if Carbon60 was listening to earlier seasons when we knew less what was going on, then fair play. And then this next review is 5 stars, comes from Disposable Joe, a podcast of wisdom. Joe writes, I thought it would never happen to me. I was confident, cocky even, but the sinister combination of a steep incline covered in freshly frozen morning dew and a determined dog leading the way has ended my Don't Fall Down 2018 campaign. It was in the moment just after Impact that it became clear to me. I love this podcast. Come for the Game of Thrones coverage, but stay for the wisdom. The chemistry between Dave, Joanna, and Neil is like listening in on your closest friends chattering among themselves while you, staying silent, get to reap all the gems born of their discussion. Learn about movies, learn about comics, learn about television, and learn about life. Falling Down was my spoiler this week, and I'm ready to hear about yours. So, thank you, Joe. Apologies to Carbon60s. Please do leave us review ratings on iTunes. It helps other people find us. Speaking of Falling Down, I wanted to remind you all that we have new merch up on our merch site. We now have a really easy URL for you to follow. Are you ready? It's chaosislit.com. That's C-H-A-O-S ISLIT.com, and that redirects to our merch page, where you can find new shirts, old shirts, and a great enamel pin that says "Don't fall down." So, you know, you might want to check that out. And then the last thing I want to say is that we have picked a movie date and time for our secret movie club that we do every month over on our Patreon page. We are watching Beetlejuice. We are watching it this Saturday at 10:27 at 10 a.m. Pacific, 1 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. British time. You're free to watch along with us if you want to, but you won't get in on the discussion unless you're in our Patreon at the small council level. So that is just all of the news that I have to share. Thank you so much.
All right. That means it's time for Neil Miller to step in and bring us into the storm.
Yes, it's time to go storm chasing. And I'm going to start with mine is more of more culture than pop culture, but it's voting. Very excited about voting this week. I went and voted before we sat down to record because early voting has started. So just do yourself a solid and do some voting. My also favorite thing is to, while you're standing in a long voting line, which you may end up, this year, I did, it was like an hour and I live in Texas. And it's like the second day of early voting. And it, anyway, my favorite thing is to pick out people, in the line and build backstories for them, like sitcom backstories.
Oh, wow. That's fun. What was the best backstory you built today?
Well, so originally I started standing behind this elderly gentleman. He had one of those cool, like, breather backpacks. And he, at first I was like, oh, grumpy old white guy. Here we go. And then I started coming up with this story where he's like a super woke old white guy. And he's super active and was like a hippie in the 60s.
Awesome.
That's about as far as I got.
Okay.
It works better just if you keep it in your head and don't say it out loud on a podcast. So, anyway, do voting, make up stories in your head.
I don't know if it's legal for you to say who you voted for. It definitely is.
I tell you what, I'll give everybody three guesses who I voted for Senate in Texas.
Yeah. Ted Cruz.
You're only going to need one.
Ted Cruz.
Oh my God. That guy's the worst. I have to admit that Ted Cruz is so bad that I would have voted for literally anyone else. So luckily we have a pretty good candidate named Beto O'Rourke who rules. But yeah, no, I mean, they could have put a literal bag of shit on the ballot and I would have been like, against Ted Cruz every day.
William Jackson Harper, better known as Cheaty from The Good Place. I don't know if he's like from Texas, but he has an adorable photo on his timeline right now where he's wearing like a Beto shirt and he's got a little like a fun sized dog. It's not tiny. It's a medium sized dog with him. And he has a tweet that just says, grab a voting buddy and head to the polls. Don't skip this one. Hashtag Beto for Texas. So
nice.
It's you and Cheaty are the only two people that I know who are supporting Beto for Senate.
But hey, if you listen and you're in Texas, that means you're probably cool. You should go vote. Cool people should definitely vote.
Agreed.
That's my thing.
Agreed.
I mean, all people should vote, but like definitely cool people.
Yeah, definitely cool people. If we ever get close to like 100% voter turnout, then we could talk about whether or not all people should vote.
Wow.
We have some time to get there.
Wow.
Wow.
The worm just turned on that one.
Dave,
all right.
Dave just went slightly authoritarian. Moving on.
Dave, do you want me to go or do you want to go?
Oh, I mean, either way.
Why don't you go?
Okay. I finally caught up with the Netflix animated series Big Mouth and continuing my catching up with Netflix, which is still ongoing. Like,
You'll never catch up. That's the whole idea of Netflix.
Exactly. I didn't vote in our bonus episode poll about Netflix television that we had last week because I didn't have time to catch up with both of your series. I don't even think Sabrina's out yet. Is Sabrina even out yet?
No.
Okay, but I could have voted it if I really did want to watch it, and I do want to watch it, and I just feel like there's lots of Netflix. The point is, I finally got around to watching Big Mouth. Season 2 came out recently. I didn't watch season 1 because I'm not always the biggest Nick Kroll fan.
Mm-hmm.
And this is Nick Kroll doing a bunch of voices, along with John Mulaney playing the other co-male lead, and as well as like a Jenny Slate thrown in and other characters. But the point is, the show was about that time in your like middle school, early high school life, where the puberty really kicks in. And it shows that as literal monsters, but is an excellent, you know, reason to do, I think what my friend Matt Patches would call blue comedy. But like in this era, you know, when we're sort of redefining when it's okay to make sexual comments and sexualize people, and when gender is defined that sort of way, a good thing to sidestep all those potentially problematic issues is take it out of the mouths of old white men and put it in the tumultuous lives of teenagers, where everybody's just making horrible decisions about having sex with inanimate objects or stealing from their mom, and nobody has any idea what's going on. It allows, I think, for some, you know, if you want your dick joke comedy and you don't want to feel weird about it, I feel like Big Mouth is the perfect outlet for that and some characters. I don't want to give away too much more, but I will say that I was super happy as somebody that wasn't initially lured in by the first season of Big Mouth, how the ensemble and the ideas have been able to grow into the second season, so that it definitely feels like it's taking on puberty from all the different angles. It starts off very two guys kind of not being able to relate to each other, but by the time the second season rolls around, the problems have expanded. So, yeah. Big Mouth.
I really like the first season. I haven't seen the second season yet because of the aforementioned too much Netflix problem, but I really did enjoy the first season, and I am a huge John Mulaney fan, and I mostly tolerate Nick Kroll because of John Mulaney, his association with John Mulaney, and I really like the way that the show is, like, at least somewhat gender balanced. And, you know, the main point of view of these two guys, because it's based on Nick Kroll's own upbringing with a childhood friend of his. But there's plenty of room for the female perspective that makes it less like, oh, I'm a tiny boy and I don't know what to do with my dick. But though that's a big part of it. But it's also like, oh, I'm a small girl. I don't know what to do with anything. So,
Yeah. I think if people want to dip their toes into it and don't want to get straight into the dude stuff, there's an episode called Girls Get Horny Too, I think, that I think you could sample that episode and see if Big Mouth is for you.
Excellent.
I think. Joanna, what's your storm?
Speaking of body blue comedy, I'm about to, like, be the most Joanna that I can possibly be and advocate for a British comedy called Upstart Crow, which is about the life and times of William Shakespeare. There are three seasons, short seasons, and a Christmas special. This is by Ben Elton, who did Blackadder. And it stars David Mitchell, the comedian, not the author, as William Shakespeare. The great Gemma Whelan of Game of Thrones is in it. She's fantastic. And guests have included, like, Noel Fielding as a, you know, a magical writing pop star of the day, or Emma Thompson as Queen Elizabeth, et cetera, et cetera. And it's just, like, I don't even like the word nerdy. It's like, it's just so dorky. It's the dorkiest thing I could possibly, like, recommend to you. But it is very much my shit. And if you like Shakespeare, and if you like people making fun of the Shakespearean legacy while celebrating, like, making fun of how impenetrable Shakespeare is while also celebrating, like, how essential Shakespeare is to our understanding of how stories are told, plus just, like, a bunch of silly humor, I really, really recommend this series. I believe you can get it on Amazon Prime if you have, like, the BritBox subscription. It might also be available on Acorn, but I don't know. It's one of those niche things, but, like, if you like something like Slings and Arrows, or if you liked Blackadder, this is sort of a combination of the two. And I would follow David Mitchell at any fire. So there you go. Upstart Crow, which is, by the way, an insult that a critic at the time hurled at Shakespeare, you know, basically called him an upstart crow. So that's like him trying to prove himself as a not very posh writer from the countryside who is a big success in London.
Good. Nice. I was going to have you explain the title because otherwise I was going to be like, that should be
a Game of Thrones spinoff.
Or I was going to say an Amazon Prime series about them trying to make a new Crow movie. Just been going on for like 8 to 10 to 15 years now.
Well, what's funny is that there is, I want to say this is right, but I think there was a bookstore in my hometown growing up called The Upstart Crow. And so that's like something that's been in my like vocabulary. Since I was little. It closed like when I was young still, but there was a bookstore called The Upstart Crow. So it's just something that like makes it like flows trippingly off my tongue, but like I can understand why it sounds weird otherwise. Anyway, it's about Shakespeare. Nice.
Flows trippingly off the tongue.
We forgot something. We forgot to something.
What is that?
We got an update from the polls from last week. We got to talk about them.
Oh yeah, that's smart. So last week was our great debate episode. If you did not tune in, or if you haven't tuned into a great debate before, if this is somehow your first episode, maybe you love Halloween. I'm getting off track. We all talk about movies we wanted to watch on Halloween night. Halloween's on a Wednesday. And then we also, so we each picked a thing. We had three contestants, and then we had a listener poll to pick another contestant. I believe it ended up being my choice, Paranorman. Neil's choice was
Trick or Treat,
and Joanna's choice was
Practical Magic.
And then the readers came in with Hocus Pocus was, I believe, the
Hocus
winner
Pocus
of their
dominated the first two rounds. Like it wasn't close in the reader what we call the reader bracket or listener bracket.
So the listener bracket resoundingly said Hocus Pocus. In the final poll, did one of us manage to beat the listeners?
Not even close. I would like to report, though, I'm very excited to announce that I took second place in both polls. because the Hocus Pocus won 48% of the vote. It was not close. But Trick or Treat, 24%. Yeah. Paranorman, 21%. And then Practical Magic also got some votes.
Well, I gotta tell you, I mean, the Practical Magic votes obviously went to Hocus Pocus. Like, there's no doubt in my mind that that's where that
lost its base.
Yeah, exactly.
Split the vote. So together, Hocus Pocus and Practical Magic got 53% of the vote, 54% of the vote.
That sounds
yeah,
like
which
the
is definitely win.
The demographic breakdown. I should say, like, that's why this is so funny, because, like, our secret movie club was, like, voting between, like, Beetlejuice and Hocus Pocus, and Beetlejuice won, which is crazy. Then to see Hocus Pocus walk away with this poll, I told Dave, I was like, this is like, I don't know, it's like electoral college versus popular vote or whatever. And he's like, yeah, democracy's messy. So that's your midterm election sentiment from Dave. Yeah, democracy's messy. But we will be watching.
Actually, the actual thing is updated to Ain't It the Way.
Yeah, Ain't It the Way. Ain't That the Way or whatever.
That's true.
I will say that for the people disappointed that Hocus Pocus lost the poll, I've decided to organize a little like witch watch, over in our Slack. I'm going to watch a few witch movies before the month is out, and Hocus Pocus is definitely one of them. And I encourage you all to join us. The Slack channel now.
Ooh,
has.
What are you? What? The Suspiria?
We're going to watch The Craft, Suspiria, Hocus Pocus, Practical Magic. And I have not decided on the fifth slot, though I'm considering giving it to that Boy Witch movie that I've never seen. Do you know the one I'm talking about?
Does that one have Tim Curry in it?
I think it has Tim Riggins in it, doesn't it?
Yes, it does have Tim Riggins in it.
Often confused for Tim Curry, Riggins.
So, Neil, you will know this movie as in the trailer. There are teens driving a car, and they're screaming because they're heading at a semi-truck. And then the car disassembles into its individual pieces, travels around the semi-truck, and then reassembles. Do you remember that shot, trailer shot?
It's called The Covenant.
Yes, it is.
And it's got Sebastian Stan, Taylor Kitsch, Chase Crawford. I mean, just a real who's whom of boy faces. And it's like the White Squall of witch movies. And, yeah, directed by the great Renny Harlin. So that's one of those, like, probably so bad it's going to be really fun to watch as a group. So we've got a little channel in the Slack called, Witch Please. Witch-Please, that you can join if you want to watch along with us. I haven't decided when we're going to do this, but this is all, like, no democracy involved in this. This is just me, head witch, assembling other witches to watch witch movies.
Assemble the coven!
And even if you're not part of the Patreon, mild spoilers for this podcast, we're going to be doing a witches episode next week. So probably also good to watch some of those witching movies.
Mm-hmm.
Get all witchy.
And then do we need to talk about the other poll, or is that's for Patreons only, I guess?
Oh, yeah, that's for Patreons. Secret only. Poll.
The one that I won. Why talk about that one? Fine.
Just know that I came in second in that one too.
Well, now that we know the standings, we don't have to talk to the people who don't know what it's about anymore.
Hold on. I heard something in my house.
Wait.
Yes, definitely investigate strange sounds. Neil, that's a good idea.
Yeah, what's going on over there?
I'll be right back.
Okay.
All right, Joanna. How do you want to... Oh, wait. I heard a thump in the distance, and now Neil isn't here. Should we just do the rest of the podcast?
Well, let's just start it, and I guess we can go check on him if we don't.
If we're gonna check, we should check together. If we've learned anything from the Halloween franchise, so we shouldn't go alone. So we'll check in on the next break.
Is that something you learned from Halloween? That's something I learned from Jamie Kennedy. I didn't know.
What movie was he watching while he was giving that lecture, Joanna?
Oh, was he watching Halloween?
He was.
Oh,
you know why that's interesting.
Why?
Let me tell you what I told friend of podcast Meredith Warner at a wedding we were both at recently. Mm-hmm. So Jamie Kennedy is watching Halloween in Scream, but in H2O, they are watching Stab 2.
The fake Scream movie.
Right. So are they watching Scream 2? Because they're using a clip from Scream 2 in the meta thing Stab 2 is Sarah Michelle Gellar on the TV screen. And in Halloween 3, Season of the Witch, the original Halloween also appears on TV. So do Scream, H2O, and Season of the Witch all appear in a universe where the Halloween movie exists?
Let's say yes, because that sounds fun.
Yeah.
Or not. But, like, what's really funny is that, you know, so we're here to talk, right, about, all the Halloween movies and maybe most specifically this newest iteration that came out in theaters this week, last week, I should say. But, have you listened to many interviews with Jamie Lee Curtis about this movie?
About the new one? I've read a lot. I don't think I've listened to a lot.
I'm sure it comes across on the page too, but I've listened to a couple like podcast interviews, stuff like that. And she, like, anytime someone starts to talk about any of the old movies except for the first one, she's like, we're not talking about those. It's just confusing. There's no she's like, we don't want to confuse the audience. Let's just pretend those movies don't exist. We're not talking about them. The continuity of the Halloween franchise goes from the first Halloween to the one that premiered last week, and that's it as far as Jamie Lee Curtis is concerned. And it was just like, I'm like, lady, you're in a lot of those movies, so okay. But I know that, Dave, you watched all of the Halloween franchise.
I did. Okay. In order for our listeners to not be completely bored to death, and also for me not to completely bore you to death, I'm going to offer you two ways to go through these movies.
Ooh, all right.
One is chronologically, which will probably involve a little bit more behind the scenes, little tidbits. And the second one would be in the order in which they're good movies, which I could also do in reverse. So, you know, we're building to the best movie.
Yeah, yeah. Let's do worst to best.
Okay.
Your experience through the Halloween.
This is going to be a little bit more commentary, a little less behind the scenes thing. But the good thing is there's like an awesome podcast called Halloween Unmasked that our friend Amy Nicholson does that's really good, and a ton of other good Halloween behind the scenes content things that actually has like interviews with the people who did it. So you're here for my opinions. Let's do it. The absolute worst of the Halloween movies is Halloween 5, The Revenge of Michael Myers. Now, some people don't have this as their worst movie, but let me tell you, it is barely a movie. It doesn't build off the premise of the previous Halloween movie where we are the young heroine who's playing Jamie Lee Curtis's daughter after she died in a car crash, yada yada. She ends up stabbing her mom at the end of that movie, and Loomis is yelling, "No! No!" And you're like, oh, cool, this little girl's going to be like a killer. Five picks up that she's did stab her mom, but her mom survived. The trauma of this has made her go mute, and she has some sort of cultish connection to Michael Myers, who wakes up and has been like preserved by this hobo who found him washed up by a river, and he kept him for 1 year from Halloween to Halloween, and I guess like Faye bathed him and fed him intravenously or something. But Michael Myers wakes up in one spot after being passed out from a year and decides to go after this mute girl who starts having psychic visions of him. There's a man in black who shows up at various points to be menacing and or to help Michael Myers. And during the filming, they did not know who that was.
Oh, no.
And then the director, who seemed to be sort of inexperienced, kept putting the child actors in like situations that were actually dangerous. There's actually a good horror scene where Jamie, the lead character, the mute girl, is caught in like a dumbwaiter shaft, and Michael Myers is just wildly stabbing through it, trying to get at her legs. And they actually had her just wedge herself up there while they had a stuntman with a real knife stabbing through. And there's another point where Michael Myers is chasing the kids while driving a car in a cornfield. And they just told the kids to run in front of the car, and they have like a guy with a mask driving it at night. So unsafe production, barely a movie. Halloween 5, Revenge of the Myers, absolute worst. The next worst is Halloween 2, the Rob Zombie director's cut.
Oh, no.
Yes. So for reasons I'll get into more with the other Rob Zombie movie, Rob Zombie's version of Halloween is, let's explain Michael Myers so you're sort of on his side because literally everybody in the world is an asshole. And Loomis is an asshole who tries to like sell Michael's story to like make better books. In this one, Laurie's trauma, which the new movie deals with in a very realistic way, and Halloween H2O even dealt with in a cool, you know, chugging lots of wine way, instead makes this new teenage young Laurie Strode go sort of in the direction of Jamie in Halloween 4 and start taking on, reenacting some of Michael's killings and being a general asshole to her friends and sort of retreating from society. And the movie ends with her basically becoming a serial killer, seeing visions of Michael Myers' mom, which doesn't really make any sense. So Halloween 2, Rob Zombie's director's cut, also has a ending that has Michael Myers speak. He says, "Die," to Loomis before being shot to death by like 100 police guns in slow motion. Michael Myers doesn't wear a mask or a full mask for a lot of this. He's just a giant wrestler guy with like a homeless man beard. Very weird movie. Rob Zombie's trying to do something he committed, so I can't hold him completely against him. It's just an ugly movie to watch. And all these bad Halloween movies, basically the only thing we're looking for is something that's fun. Which brings us to Halloween 6, The Curse of Michael Myers, introducing one Paul Rudd to the cinematic oeuvre, shot before Clueless, and then released, I think, also before Clueless, because he gets the introducing tag. This one was Weinsteined up. So a movie was shot, and then Bob Weinstein was like, this makes no sense and is testing really badly. So they cut it up and 90s-ized it. So I'm going to say Halloween 6, The Curse of Michael Myers, the producer's cut, is the one that goes crazy batshit. And like Rob Zombie decides they need to explain Michael Myers. But being the sixth Halloween movie in a long line that's trying to keep continuity, the man in black is actually one of Loomis's compatriots that we saw in the first movie, the one he's like walking out of the lab with, being like, you should have told me if we need more protection. He's recast, but that's apparently who the man in black has been. He's the leader of the druidic cult of the thorn. Michael Myers has a thorn tattoo on him, and basically one child of every generation was cursed to kill his entire family line. And now he only needs to get Jamie, Laurie Strode's daughter, and Jamie's baby, who we learn is grossly a child of incest because this cult made Michael Myers have sex with his granddaughter, or wait, niece? Anyway. So he needs to kill the baby. Paul Rudd finds the baby. Paul Rudd plays Tommy from the original movie, All Grown Up. He's researched the Cult of the Thorn, like all, you know, Illinois youth do. They research druidic cults and whatnot, and finds Loomis and is like, we could stop him with good runes. He surrounds Michael Myers with these positive runes, which sort of free him and allow him and Jamie and the baby to get away. And Loomis, meanwhile, goes to finish off Michael Myers, and Michael's gone, and Loomis realizes he has a thorn tattoo, which means he's now keeper of Michael Myers, and he yells, no! No! And then Donald Pleasance died after that movie, so we never get any conclusion as to what all of that meant. The series reboots after that. So, now we're still in the bad Halloween movies. The next one up is Halloween, the Rob Zombie theatrical edition. The Rob Zombie director's cut is basically the only one you could find if you're going to find like a Rob Zombie's Halloween. That one is gross. Like, the entire movie is gross in terms of it's like this hellbilly, people call it, where it's like everybody's bad. His mom's a stripper. His dad's verbally abusive. Like, Laurie Strode is like, you know, really, I don't know, needlessly gross at the beginning with her parents. That's all. A lot of it is him adding it back in with the director's cut, including an alternate escape for Michael Myers. In both versions of the movie, you spend like the first hour with a young Michael Myers and Loomis trying to figure out whether or not he could cure him and deciding ultimately that he's evil. It does a pretty good job of like humanizing a serial killer. It's a pretty good, like, ugly Rob Zombie serial killer movie. But then it has to become Halloween for the second half and basically retread the original. The director's cut changes how Michael Myers breaks out of prison to unnecessarily include a rape scene, which is, yeah.
Always a great choice.
And it's like, the theatrical version is just him all of a sudden raging and like killing seven cops and doesn't involve the two characters that rape another character or their deaths. They're just completely cut out of the movie. So that the theatrical version is actually watchable. The director's cut is like, would be at the bottom of this list if I included it at all. But the theatrical version, like I said, if you're going to try something, commit to it. Rob Zombie does like a let's feel bad for Michael Myers, the supernatural serial killer movie. And at least you're on his side for the most part. All right. Almost to the good ones. Last bad one, Halloween Resurrection, which is barely on the side of bad because it kills off Laurie Strode in the beginning, basically to get Jamie Lee Curtis out of the franchise, and then made the mistake of casting Busta Rhymes as like the hero character. The premise isn't that bad. It's they're shooting a reality TV series inside the Michael Myers home, and Busta Rhymes has set up like all these fake scares for this cast of teens that includes like Katie Sackhoff. And the teens eventually realize that it's fake, but then one of them actually stumbles upon an underground lair where Michael Myers has been living and like eating rats. And then Michael Myers starts actually killing them. All of that part is actually good. Once the killing starts, it's a pretty good solid reason. And it's like, don't go and invade the Michael Myers house. That's sort of Laurie Strode's mistake in the first movie, is to slip that key under the door. But then it gets weird when Busta Rhymes starts doing kung fu, like going wah, like spin kicking kung fu against Michael Myers, and then like beats him by kicking him against some electrical wires. And then he says like, happy fucking Halloween, yo, hey Michael, happy fucking Halloween, and then like makes some sort of speech about television and reality television somehow contributing to this. Really weird ending, Halloween Resurrection. I will say, though, that's like the way you make Michael Myers scary again if you don't have Laurie Strode, is he's just once again picking on random people for seemingly random reasons. That's why it's so high up on this list, despite being very bad with the Busta Rhymes stuff. All right, into the tolerable Halloween movies. Halloween Woo! 3, Season of the Witch, not a Michael Myers movie. It's a science fiction movie, but once again, sort of about druids. A warlock steals a piece of Stonehenge, chips off pieces of it, puts it into Halloween masks, makes the Halloween mask super popular, sells them to a whole bunch of kids with the plan that on Halloween that he gets them all to tune into a television special that triggers the chips in the mask and melts their heads, turning their heads into bugs and snakes and poisonous things that crawl out of the masks and then kill the parents, thereby like killing a whole bunch of people for the Samhain celebration of Druidic Halloween. Kind of a fun B sci-fi movie, has a very age inappropriate romance that is also like plot inappropriate between a drunk doctor who like blows off spending time with his kids to investigate the mystery of this girl whose dad died, and then he ends up like sleeping with her a whole bunch and we get to like see it. That girl is an actress who ends up being like the basis of a Woody Allen movie, apparently in real life. So it all gets like weird and creepy.
Manhattan, or
I think so.
Oh, okay.
She was working as an intern on one of his other films, and apparently became the basis for one of his creepy movies about being in love with a much younger girl.
Great, great, great.
So that kind of plays out on Halloween 3. It's a weird. Basically all the human drama you don't care about, but the weird sci-fi stuff, and then they have like androids that kill people in really creative ways. So it's not horrible. It's just I could see why people who are expecting like a Halloween movie in like a Michael Myers way are like, what the fuck was this? But still good. All right. Halloween 4, The Return of Michael Myers. Really good sequel. Probably the best sequel that doesn't have Jamie Lee Curtis in it. Yes, the best sequel doesn't have Jamie Lee Curtis in it. Halloween 4, The Return of Michael Myers. This is after 3. They're like, we actually have Michael Myers in this one. Jamie Lee Curtis's character, Laurie Strode, is killed off screen in a car crash. Her daughter, Jamie Lloyd, is being hunted by Michael Myers. It's cool because it sort of has him assembling his costume after he wakes up from being burned at the end of 2. He has to kill a mechanic and get his suit, and then he goes to a Halloween store and gets his mask, then proceeds to menace teenagers who get funneled, like, with a very competent police strategy, like, back into a house they barricade, but the police have to get lured back out in the house because there's been, like, a mob that's created with, like, drunk people throughout town being like, Michael Myers, and they accidentally, like, kill a dude who's just, like, peeing in the bushes or something. There's a whole bunch of, like, different layers of what would happen if Michael Myers, the legend, returned to Haddonfield, and I think it does a really good job navigating that. And it's in the age that slasher films exist, so it has a lot of slasher tropes, and because of that, it's, like, a whole bunch of fun. I don't think there's a ton of, like, you know, gore or interpersonal ugliness, even from Loomis, who's usually fucking crazy. So Halloween 4 is a bunch of fun. All right. Moving up the list, Halloween H2O, great movie. Really underrated considering it's like a post, or maybe just rated now. I feel like everybody who's appreciated it has aged to our age, so probably better rated now than it was when it came out. But it's a Kevin Williamson helps with the story and script, so it's a post-Scream slasher movie. And because of that, I think really works. It's a low body count, but it has believable teenagers, including introducing Josh Hartnett. And a young Michelle Williams who sort of deal with Michael Myers, as well as LL Cool J, who survives in what seems like could have been a rewrite, but apparently wasn't. Like
this was the first Halloween movie I ever saw, and I was in college when I saw it. So my first experience of the Halloween franchise was H2O.
Yeah, it's pretty good. There's a lot of echoes of H2O in the new Halloween, I think. The only difference is this one, H2O just assumes Halloween 1 and 2 exist, so they're definitely related. And there's definitely, like, I need to take responsibility for my family tinge to H2O and Laurie's rage that doesn't, or that does exist in 2018, but in, like, a different way. Yeah, and then moving up, Halloween 2018, which we'll talk about soon, is my number 3, and then Halloween 2, and then Halloween 78, I sort of clumped together because they function best as one movie, I think, although Halloween 78 is the only actual good contribution to cinema movie on this entire list. You could have some fun with Halloween, but Halloween 78 is like a movie you should watch if you like horror movies or if you like cinema or if you like low-budget filmmaking. There's a ton of reasons to watch it, and I think it elevates, and there's a reason we keep referencing it and over-referencing it sometimes in the current day. That's 11 Halloween movies.
You did it.
Yeah.
You did it. It was
good. We didn't stay on topic all the way, but we stayed pretty close.
Very, very close. Very, very close. Well, I'm impressed by your whole marathon. And this is something that I like to ask you when you consume a lot of something. Dave Gonzalez, what makes a Halloween movie?
Ooh. All right, so we have to discard three, or we're going to have some outliers. So assuming Season of the Witch is not part of what would make a Halloween movie, you're going to have Michael Myers. He's going to be an unstoppable force that wakes up and goes to Haddonfield. And he is going to attack people with blunt and sharp instruments.
And what of, like, a Laurie type figure?
I don't know if you need that necessarily. Six definitely tries to pin the hero on Paul Rudd even while there's, like, a Laurie type figure. And I think, like, the Laurie type figure really pales in comparison to Laurie because they have to keep connecting whoever the Laurie type figure is to Laurie Strode, with the exception being the one time they decided it could be Busta Rhymes.
And what if you just take the original Halloween and this and Halloween 2018 as a two-part story, which is what the filmmakers of the latter have intended? What then in your mind makes a Halloween movie? Just with those two data points.
Michael Myers and Laurie Strode are locked in a battle where one is hunting the other.
Okay. All right. It is me, Joanna Robinson. We have sent Dave upstairs to check on a mysterious noise. And joining me this part of the episode is the ghost of Neil Miller to read out some names for our lovely Patreon supporters. So I'm going to start by thanking Michael Filippini, Michael Belitsky, Natalie Muskin Press, Nate, Nathan Bodnar, Nathan Critchfield, Patricia Delaney, Phil Jack, Jake, oh, I messed this one up before, Philip Durrett, Rachel Aluli, I think it's Jake. Anyway, Randy Blash, Randy Webb, Rebels Rebels Podcast, Reginator Cakes, and Rick Russell. Thank you guys so much, and the Ghost of Neil Miller.
I have a very spooky thank you to give out to Robbie Repass, Rose Stengline, Ruby Durham, Russell Griffin, Ryan M., Ryan Allwood, Ryan Silverstein, Riley Trahan, Sam Cohen, Sam Adolfo, Samba Muteba, Sarah Carmichael, Sarah Ellis, Savio Nguyen, and Sean.
Thank you all.
Shout out to Sean from The Afterlife.
So much for all your support. For me, like, having not done your exhaustive level of research, and I always applaud you when you do something like this, it's always incredibly impressive. For me, what I found in Halloween 2018, I will just backtrack really quickly and say, like, I've been surprised by some of the negative critical reaction because, like, it's fine to not like this movie, absolutely, but, the reaction that think of it as like a cheap knockoff of the original, sort of like a Force Awakens to A New Hope or something like that, which is also a criticism I don't agree with, but whatever. To me, I'm amazed that people could have that reaction because, like, it's one thing to just sort of, like, emptily is not really a word, right? Is it? I don't know. I'm very tired. it's one thing to just, like, sort of shallowly, I'll say, repeat beat by beat a very famous story. It's another thing to, like, rewind a story from another angle, and in doing so, deepen both this retelling of the story and the original story to begin with. Something that I talked a lot about in the review that I wrote for Vanity Fair, and I never write film reviews, but I wrote the Halloween film review, so whatever. It's just this idea of, like, you know, and Jamie Lee Curtis has talked about this a lot, this idea of inherited trauma and this idea of believing women, because I didn't realize, and, you know, I didn't realize until I saw Halloween 2018 that in the original Halloween, right, like, Lori knows she's being stalked and she tries to talk to her friends about it. And her friends are like, you're crazy. Like, and, you know, like everyone's like, you're imagining things, like, calm down. But Lori was right. And then once again, you know, in Halloween 2018, like, nobody believes her about the threats that is, you know, coming for her family. And also she has, because of the corrosive effect of the trauma on her, has become like a monster in her own right. And it's, I find those themes very resonant, you know, despite the fact that this new version was written by and directed by men, there is a woman credited with or doesn't get enough credit, for the original Halloween, concept and execution. And so I think this is like a woman's story much more than maybe it had been originally thought of. That person is Deborah Hill, who was a producer on the original film. And so, like, it's, and some people think she wrote the original film. And, like, I think Halloween for so long, especially considering some of the iterations that you just talked about, like, just became this idea, this, like, slasher, like, let's slash up some babysitters or whoever. And like, you know, the knife, you know, Michael Myers and his knife or his blunt objects or his heavy boots. But I think what Halloween 2018 does is make it just a much more interesting, deeper reflection on what it means to be like a woman and pursued and not believed and what that does to you. And that's very much intentionally. And so, like, for me, someone who likes their horror to be very, like, linked to, like, non-supernatural human trauma. And so if you look at, like, The Haunting of Hill House, which I've talked about a lot, like, that's a similar treatment of classic horror tropes, like, linked to less supernatural sort of human trauma. That's why I value Halloween 2018 so much, and why it really, really worked for me. But you put it third, which is still really high on your list.
Yeah.
But...
Well, I want to pause and you haven't seen Hereditary yet?
I'm too scared. I know I need to.
Oh, there's a trilogy capper out there for you, and you're seconds away from it.
Okay, I'll work on my courage for that.
Yeah, no, it's been a good year for, I think, trauma, and I haven't seen Hill House, but I'm going to say, having seen Hereditary and Halloween, just trauma of women, familial trauma within multiple generations of women, I mean, it's interesting because the Halloween, the first movie, was sort of a transition away from what Hollywood thought of as horror into, like, the slasher genre, or, like, the idea of dealing with serial killers, which wasn't even, I think, a word at the time, from what used to be, like, an exploration of themes like trauma, but in, like, a much more gothic sort of sense. If you're haunted houses, you're... You know, the original Haunting of Hill House adaptation. And that sort of thing, I think, is coming back as the slasher, you know, expires and torture porn sort of expires. And I think the need for necessarily more gore has been redirected slightly towards more fun movies, I think. Or at least movies that I know are flying the gore flag enough that I don't need to see them. It's interesting to see the Halloween franchise turn in that direction, because every other time it's tried to complicate itself, it's tried to say something about Michael Myers, with the exception of H2O, which Jamie Lee Curtis probably should have gotten an executive producer credit on, because she came up with the idea and then sort of got Kevin Williamson on board to, like, flesh it out. So it's always interesting that when Jamie Lee Curtis is heavily involved. It's about, it becomes about Laurie Strode, and you realize that's sort of what it always should be. And then every time someone else has to try to figure something out, they misread, I think, what's good about the first movie, which that it's like, you know, it's a bloodless stalker movie that is about all the feelings during the stalking that leads up to like this crazy release. And he's an insane killer, and you don't really need to explain him. You know, you just have that one first person shot, which is amazing to sort of like put you with, give you a little bit of backstory, but otherwise he's just the shape or the boogeyman. And 2018 sort of recovers that. If I do have a criticism of it, and the reason I think it's third on my list is it commits the sin of some of the other Halloween sequels, which is spending way too much time reinforcing that Michael Myers is an unstoppable force. Usually you have Loomis, who used to do that. In this one, you have our podcast team, which is fine. They also fit eventually into what I feel like the greater theme of the movie is, which is just men will put women in like death-defying circumstances and miscontextualize it for their own gain without giving it a second thought. But that being said, I think you could have just had the pre-credit sequence with the podcasters, which is sort of like winkingly ridiculous in, I think, a very fun way, and not had to draw them out through another 20 minutes of the movie while we were getting to know Laurie and while they were driving to God knows where, to do, you know, whatever. They were at the, you know, graveyard. Like, it's just slightly too much build up for what we should already know if we're familiar with these characters, or can be shown if you're going to have Michael go on a rampage later on in the movie. So I think this movie takes a little bit of while to click into what it really wants to be. But once it starts that unfolding, once the granddaughter, you know, notices her boyfriend's toxic right about the same time as Michael shows up in town, and those two things start to move towards each other, the movie really clicks into high gear, and I think it stays there through like Judy Greer cheer point, where then you just realize you're not necessarily scared, you're like having a great time.
Judy Greer cheer point is the most delicate way I've ever heard you handle a spoiler in my life, so hats off to you. I did want to ask you what you thought of the way in which this, you know, you said 2018 or modern horror movies feel like sort of fun, like, you know, Get Out is like a horror comedy, like whatever. But what did you think of the way that humor is balanced in this movie? You know, like one of, you know, this is one of the credited screenwriters on this film is Danny McBride, who is known much more for comedy than he is for horror. And I think Danny McBride is a thoughtful guy, but like there are times when his brand of humor worked for me. Like there's a whole babysitter sequence that's a huge, you know, it's a big play on, you know, one of Laurie's friends in the original movies and how she dies and some of the reveals there. Like it's a nice like little twist on that, and you get a lot of comic relief out of this one kid, you know, her charge basically. But then there's like a later thing with like two cops talking about shawarma, if I recall correctly.
No, it's banh mi sandwiches.
Oh, banh mi sandwiches. Yeah, that's right. Shawarma's Avengers joint, I guess. they're talking about banh mi sandwiches, and that whole thing, I'm like, I could lose all of that. I don't need the banh mi sandwich stuff here. So like, did the humor work for you throughout? How did you feel about that?
Yeah, it worked for me. The banh mi sandwich stuff worked because it kind of humanized those cops, and those cops are sort of like a winking nod to some cops in Halloween 5 who die similarly off screen and who also are comic relief to the point that they're like honking and whistling sounds when they walk up into a scene, like, so I'm glad they didn't go that far, but like dopey cops, the banh mi sandwich thing, and that you eat like a fifth grader would feed himself, humanizes those people who are about to die slightly in a way, and I think it adds to the fun of it. So like everything I was trying to say about Rob Zombie's Halloween is like when you're spending time with the people in that world, you're just watching them be horrible to each other, and because of that, you like slowly get on the side of the serial killer. And then you realize that, like, he's also bad because he's also in a Rob Zombie movie. And you're just like, who am I rooting for here? Why am I watching this? The little characterizing beats of humor, I think, go a long way to making even, like, the side characters really sing here, especially, like, Toby Huss as the dad, who really has, like, nothing to do but is a memorable character in this movie for some reason. Because he...
What's the weird joke he makes, like, early? Does he say something about, like, getting his penis out or something like that? Like, what it... Did I imagine that? Did I dream that?
I mean, he makes some sort of weird joke, but then, like, every scene he's in, he's playing it slightly different than everybody else that's in it, and it ends up, like, really working because it's the callousness that all the male characters show towards, like, the genuine threat to the women in their life. Like, he's literally playing with a yo-yo up until he gets killed. So, like, it's that sort of thing where the decisions of the movie... I really all clicked into a very clear vision for me. And even though it was written by men and made by men, I feel like that part of what they're saying is like a really interesting contribution to the Laurie Strode, Michael Myers story, which is also very interesting. But like straight up, you know, having... no, I can't spoil that. Some of the spoilers are very much like even the guys you think are going to be your allies in a situation are in it for their own personal
jerks motives. Yep.
And you can't trust even the people that you thought. And I think, you know, building those sorts of things, by the time you get to that point of the movie where every single male character is like, there's no help, there's going to be no help there, and you're building towards the climax. The previous time that you spent with everybody except the bloggers really feels like time well spent, I think.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense to me. All right, I know that you, I don't know how much you can talk about, but I know that you have been like on the side collecting some Easter eggs. Can you share any of them with us, even without revealing your source? Just some fun Easter eggs you know about this movie? Or maybe not. We could just cut this whole thing out.
I'm trying to think about like fun Easter eggs that. So I will say the one that I know about that I have because I have friends that worked on this movie. I've been going around watching all the Easter eggs and Halloween like YouTube videos, and like was forced to drunkenly drag one for just being a whole bunch of like teenage dicks on Twitter.
Sorry, you missed this. Sorry,
we're like, even though it's not a good Halloween movie, we're gonna go through all the Easter eggs. I'm like, don't do that at the top of your shit. Like, what sort of criticism are you doing? Be service criticism or be an opinion.
Right.
So I shouldn't say that on this podcast, but I think everybody knows what they're getting into. I will say the one thing that I haven't noticed on any of the videos is in the first Halloween when Jamie Lee Curtis is walking away from Michael Myers in the daylight scene, she's singing like a made-up song that's like just the two of us or I want to be alone just with you. That song fully orchestrated it, Close to Me. It's called Close to Me. That song is like fully orchestrated in like a Patsy Cline version, and it's playing on the radio when the old man is talking to the kid before they discover the breakout of the ambulance. So they made like a full version of that song, and that's what's sort of eerily playing in that foggy scene. And there are other things like that that I can't talk about now, but would love to talk about in the future.
All right, excellent. Well, is there anything else we should say about the Halloween franchise before we go look for Neil?
No. It's Halloween franchise.
Halloween.
It's a good time to be a Michael Myers fan.
Okay, here's I think I know your answer. But I'm going to say give our listeners only three Halloween movies to watch. Which three would you say they should watch?
Watch the first one, the new one, and fuck it, three.
That was going to be mine, actually. I thought you were going to say two.
Two works really good together, but then you have to deal with the fact that John Carpenter was like, how do I end this? They're brother and sister, and he burns alive. And then everybody was like, nah. So just best not even deal with it. Jamie Lee Curtis wears a horrible wig. It does have some really good kills, but it's also kind of slow. So yeah, three.
I say one, the original, the most recent, and three, because it's bananas. So why not?
We can't have the same list. I'm going to change my three to H2O then.
Okay. That would be my third choice. So fine. I will say 1, 3 and 2018. And you say 1, H2O 2018. So there we go.
Perfect. All right. So that's 11 Halloween movies. Neil, what are we doing next week?
Oh, Dave, I can't wait to tell you what we're doing next week.
Ah, Neil Miller!
What? Neil's back? Wait, I can't follow his continuity. I thought Neil died like 3 movies ago.
Neil died in the universe where the scary masks melt the children's faces.
Oh.
But we're not in that universe anymore.
He's back!
I'm not entirely sure what you guys are talking about. I've been here the whole time.
Yes.
Anyway.
Of course. Like Laurie Strode. Definitely didn't die and come back.
Sure. Next week, the title's sort of TBA, but I'm calling it Witches, Bitches. We're going to be talking about witches. We're going to be covering Suspiria, old and new. We're going to be talking about Sabrina, old and new. And then any other witchiness that we want to discuss. I know Joanna, as she mentioned in the open, is going to be watching a bunch of witchy movies. So it'll be fun. We'll just talk witches and everyone will be safe. It'll be fine.
Yeah. And that should be coming out on Halloween for y'alls. So until then, for your pre-partying Halloween weekends, where could people find more of our work online? Let's start with Joanna Robinson.
You can find me putting lime in the coconut on vanityfair.com, or you can find me on Twitter at Joe Wrote This.
And Neil Miller.
You can find me stabbing co-eds with a machete over on filmscorerejects.com.
Dark.
At Rejects. I'm not for non-consensual situations, so I'll just be murdering the young men.
Yes.
At Rejects on Twitter. Don't forget to follow the show at Storm of Spoilers, or email us your thoughts about witches, stormofspoilers@gmail.com.
And I'm Dave Gonzalez. You can find me on Twitter at DA70. I will otherwise be running around yelling how evil Mike Myers is just constantly, like being the worst psychiatrist ever. Just like, he's evil, we should kill him. Which should be no psychiatrist's response to anything. So stay out of my way and don't fall down.
I put a spell on you. And now you're mine. You can't stop the things I do. I ain't lying.
No! No! Don't listen to them!
Been 300 years, right down to the day. Now the witch is back, and there's hell to pay. I put a spell on you.
Good joke. Happy Halloween. Thanks a lot.
No, man, I'm serious.
You got your head.